I have two brothers, and the three boys, we loved to go into the ocean and to surf on the waves. It was wonderful. And I remember that one day the sky was blue like here, really wonderful. The water was very pure, and it hardly seemed to move. It was like a lake, but a lake with waves. It was very, very beautiful, and we went into the sea, into the ocean, and we went quite deep to go through those waves, to do body surfing. It was just great, 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 and the waves were really big. The waves were really big. And we always went deeper and deeper because we wanted to catch the big waves. And at one moment, I turned around and I saw there was somebody at the coast who was doing like this. When I looked better, and it was my mother. And she was out of herself. Of fear, because indeed what we were doing was completely out of mind, was very, very dangerous. Each day people were drowning there. It was so dangerous. We were really flirting with death, but it was great. It was great, and I still remember it. We human beings, we have something with boundaries. We like to go nearby the boundaries and sometimes to cross the boundaries. We are attracted by what is not allowed. And in particular when you are young and coming nearby those boundaries or doing what is not really allowed, pleasure can be very real. I think we all know that. And the younger we are, the stronger the call can be to do it. I see some of us are recognizing it. But how can we understand that when you look at people around you, there are people, and it does not really depend on their age, whatever. Here you have Father George. He's always happy and willing to help, and there's some passion in that man. And you have people of all ages who have energy and who are happy and who are joyful. And others, from a very young age on, seem to have stranded in something like mediocrity, and something grey, and something passive. They just want to leave me alone, not too difficult, please. How can one explain this? That you have such different ways people develop, people grow in their humanity. Is this just a matter of DNA? Is it written in the stars? Or is it something that has to do with personal development, with humanization by education, something one can learn, something we are responsible for ourselves, for the little children that are here, and so on. Well, you know, in the Jesuit pedagogical tradition, there is one word that has never left indifferent, and it is coming back again. For some decades it was almost forbidden, it was taboo, now it's coming again. And the word, and I think most of us know it, is excellence. Excellence. Excellere, from the Latin word excellere, to go above, to excess, all that. And I hear it a lot nowadays, not only anyhow in the Jesuit or Ignatian family, also beyond. And it's interesting when you hear the word excellence, you often also hear other words used at the same time in the same conversations, the same sentences, and very different words. Words like elite, sometimes, or a high intellectual level, or the best, or if possible, better than the others. But also other words. When people try to explain something of that Ignatian pedagogical model, words like freedom, words like strong personality, like discernment, like to go beyond, to be critical, and so on. And sometimes you also, and fortunately not too quite often, words like service and words like responsibility. I think it's clear that with regard to this tradition of excellence, there is a lot of ambiguity. It's not so clear what it is really about. Or maybe it is clear, but there just is some ambiguity. And those of us who are familiar with the life, with the history, the development, the personal development of Saint Ignatius, can easily make the link between that ambiguity and the life of Ignatius. The conversion of Ignatius took quite some time and quite some energy. Conversion, anyhow, is a matter of the whole life. But from the family where he was born and the noble circles in which he was educated, Ignatius inherited a tremendous personal ambition. He wanted to excel. He only wanted the best. And he wanted to be better than others. He wanted to be seen. And it was a success with regard to that. He was heroic. He wanted to be heroic, and he indeed was heroic. But the conversion, I don't know, Ignatius had a very strong experience of conversion, slow but very deep going. Conversion doesn't mean your personality changes. You keep your same personality, at least in the beginning, and then maybe some rearrangements can be made. But Ignatius wanted to be a hero for the young ladies and for the other noblemen. Now he simply wanted to impress God and to be a spiritual hero. And he continued to be as childish as he had been before. So before he was clothed in very refined clothes, and now, in an almost ridiculous way, it was not ridiculous, but in an exaggerated way, he wore lumps or whatever. He didn't want to wear shoes any longer, just like me. For other reasons. he prayed 6 hours a day on his knees. He prayed 6 hours a day on his knees, and at the same time, he did a pilgrimage. For 7 days, with no 6 days and nights, without eating and drinking, because he had read about a saint who had done the pilgrimage without eating and drinking for 5 days. So if that saint could do it for 5 days, I will do it for 6 days. And he did it. He did it. Simply the result of all those heroic spiritual deeds he imposed on himself, let's say that's to some extent childish interpretation of excellence he had imposed on himself, was that he lost his consolation and he became depressive and he almost committed suicide. It was a matter for him of will. He imposed it by a pure act of will on himself. It took years and years for Ignatius to shift from this prestation-oriented and competitive interpretation of excellence towards something else that was really humanizing and that was based on something completely different. And of course that went slowly throughout the discovery of descent. Yesterday Josephine spoke us about the discernment, which is of course very important also with regard to this Ignatian excellence. It is interesting to see that in the writings of Ignatius, I don't think the word excellence ever appears. It's not in the writings of Ignatius, it's not in the constitutions, it's not in the spiritual exercises, I don't think it's in his letters, it's nowhere. But there is another word that is very important in the writings of Ignatius, and it has reappeared and now is being used everywhere. It's the word magis. Magis has not to do with magic, has nothing to do with that. It's a Latin word, it's a comparative, it means more intense, deeper, stronger. It's more, it's a comparative. And that word of magis is like a thread through all kind of dynamics Ignatius offers us, in particular in the spiritual exercises. And what I would like to do now is to give some reflections with regard to this magis. What is the Ignatian magis? And how can you find for yourself this Ignatian magis? I will do it in 3 points, or I will shortly develop 3 aspects of this Ignatian magis. First of all, the Ignatian magis, to some extent, is strictly personal. Magis has nothing to do with comparing yourself to others. Even if for children or adolescents, comparing with others can be an important way to discover things. But fundamentally, magis is not a matter of comparing yourself to others in order to be better than others. It's not, magis has nothing to do with a contest. It's not a matter of competition. It's not competition for the simple reason that the implementation of it, the result, what magis means to everybody in particular, is different. It is different for each of us for the simple reason that each person, each human being is called, it's a vocation, is called in a unique way to be human and to implement his unique vocation to develop a personality. I have a twin brother. I have a real twin brother. He's married, he has children. If you were sitting here, you would not see the difference. But he's different from me. Okay, there are similarities. But he really has made a different choice in his life. And for one person that magis, and I will further develop it, so that particularity will be more on a relational level. For somebody else, it will be on an intellectual level. It can be on an artistic, on a sports level, it can be on the religious level, it can be simply in daily life, the tasks of the daily life, whatever. But the importance is, it has nothing to do with elitism. It's for everybody. Everybody can do something with this invitation to mindfulness. Nobody is condemned to mediocrity. Everybody with his or her capacities, unique humanity, is called in some way to enjoy, to taste something of the pleasure of mindfulness, of being good in one domain, whatever domain it can be. And of course, it's a very important duty of educators to help young people. And nowadays we are young until we are 40 and even beyond, to discover what this can be, and it's a lifelong challenge. Mindfulness is strictly personal. But how do you find it? How can you find it? The Ignatian excellence market cannot be an alibi for allowing yourself to be only moved by your will, by decisions. In older times, fortunately it's over. You can imagine how Ignatian spirituality in the 19th century had developed. It's almost terrible. It was said of Jesuits that they could wear their trousers without braces, simply with their will. They didn't need braces, it was said by Jesuits. They could keep their trousers simply by their will. It's good to have a good will. It's a grace. It's really richness of having a strong will. But it's not made, therefore. Will and desire are two different things. Finding out what your magis challenge, if I may call it this way, is not like going to a supermarket and choosing the challenge of the day. That's the way it is being presented today. Of course, it can be fun just for one day to do, all the things you can do at the beach now, in the air, with the sky. Not very specializing those things. But for your deeper life choices, there is something else. There really is something more. And we should not accept that they are forced upon us by commercials, or by what people think, or what people say, by trends, like it often is the case. No, the real Ignatian markets, or that magis just becomes Ignatian when it is rooted in our deeper personal desire that lives and speaks in our hearts. It was for Ignatius a real liberating experience to discover, that was his discovery of discernment, that the desire had not to be produced by himself, had not to be invented by himself. It was given to him. That's what we call vocation, personal vocation. Everybody has this personal vocation, this desire given to him, to her, by God. And discernment has to do with discovering day by day what it means. That desire, that passion in one's heart. And the more we succeed in discovering that passion, that desire, and the more we can make our decisions, our choices, the big ones, the small ones, rooted on that passion, goes by itself. Because if really you can organize your life in function to or depending on that desire, on that passion, then energy, to some extent, comes spontaneously, automatically. Because that desire, that passion, is an endless resource of creativity, each in his way, in her way. And pushing the boundaries, which is very popular nowadays, can possibly be the result of this magis experience. It can indeed be that one becomes able to go much further than you could before. But it's not an aim as such. Because the opposite can also be true. If really, for instance, I have absolutely no sense of orientation. None. The first night we were here, we went a walk and I got lost completely. Systematically. I can really say I have accepted it now. And I can laugh with it. Because I have other places, other dimensions in my life where I'm not completely lost. And because I know I can do some things, and I can do them more or less well, I can more or less easily accept, at least for some things, that I am not good in it. Because in other places, I'm good. And I think it's clear that the review of today, the examine, therefore, is so important to realize and to see more clearly where that desire, where that consolation comes from, where it is, not where it should come from, nor where I would like that it is, no, where it is. And so, therefore, experience, the real life experience, precise experience in Ignatian spirituality, pedagogy, and discernment is so important. Mine is strictly personal. It depends on desire. It has all to do with that unique personal desire. And third aspect, it leads to decentration. I don't know if it's an existing English word, but I call it decentration. When you look in the text of the spiritual exercises, I will explain what. When you look into the text of the spiritual exercises, for instance, the petitions of grace in the second week, you will see that the word magis occurs a lot, and almost always in a relational context of love. It's to love thee more dearly, to follow thee more clearly, you know, that petition of grace of the second week as magis, magis te amare, magis te sic. So to love more, to serve more, to entrust oneself more. So even though, and that's a critic that is often made to Ignatian spirituality, even though Ignatian spirituality is rooted in something very personal. Okay, you can also do communal discernment, but mostly it's personal discernment. So Ignatian spirituality has something very personal, and it can seem a bit egoistic. Only me and myself and my feeling and my consolation. It is not at all, it would be a wrong interpretation of Ignatian spirituality to consider it to be an invitation to egotism. It is not an invitation to sculpt and to refine a lifelong my own personality, my beautiful personality. And to refine a little bit here and refine a little bit there so that the artwork my life would be or could be would ever more be, you know what I mean. The magis only becomes an invitation to what the first Jesuits called humaniora, that means to become more human, if or to the degree that we can put the center not in ourselves, but outside ourselves. Decentration. That it is not always about my own little personal comfort, what is good and sweet and nice for myself, but that I can push my own boundaries towards the others. And I can open myself fundamentally for the others. And that's what is being called, I have already heard the word several times here, to be men and women for and with others. The men or women who really are free are people who become free from themselves to become free for others. That's the given life to which Jesus invites us. That's what he says in Matthew 10:39. It's only when you lose your life for my sake that you will find the life. That's the decentration to which ultimately Ignatian Magis, excellent, and I think simply Christian life, because this is the basic thing of any Christian vocation, but when we can come to that decentration. I have given you now an interpretation of this Ignatian excellence through the word, through the concept of Amartus. It is, and it continues to be, a fragile concept. Like Ignatian spirituality, it can be misused, can be abused. And it continues to be often interpreted in an intellectual, purely intellectual, or an elitist way. I think, for me, it's a really hope-giving aspect of Ignatian spirituality. It gives hope for what it can be, it can mean to be a human. It allows me, it invites me, and yesterday we have been, I heard of it by Josephine, that excellence can be lived, can be enjoyed, can be experienced in ordinary life. We do not have to go through extraordinary experiences to live. No, it's a thing you can live from morning till night in every concrete single situation. And it allows us to experience that we are not condemned to be prisoners of our limitations. We are not condemned to be the hopeless, helpless prisoners of our limitations. There is more in us. Okay, with some things we have to deal with, but each of us has places where he, she can grow and can experience something of the joy of growing, the joy of consolation, the joy of freedom. That comes, so these were some thoughts I wanted to share with you about Ignatian excellence, to prevent that it would just be an intellectual and theoretical thing. We have prepared for you a journey through your own experience in order to allow you to discover, to discern, we call that in Ignatian spirituality, to discern, to feel, to become more conscious of what happens, what has happened and continues to happen in your own personal what it goes on, but in the history of your life. So you have here, so from until 4 now, it's until 4, yeah, we'll be in silence. Silence does not simply mean that, between brackets, it's forbidden to speak. It has not so much to do with that. Silence is a way of being. It's a way of being personally and in the group. It's a permission we give to one another to go, to enter into our interiority. And therefore, it's also a group commitment, because if two people are talking, and others pass by and so on, the personal silence of the others is being broken. So it's not only a personal, it's a communitarian, a collective engagement or commitment we would ask you to try to take on, to allow yourselves, to allow ourselves to be in silence, to go to another level. I like to call it interiority. To enter into our interiority. It's maybe one of the most precious goods in today's society. The silence and entering into that interiority. But maybe to have some sleep, but not only to have sleep. Good, would be a bit of a shame if you only slept during this day. You have a lot of questions, far too much, far too much. This is not an exam, this is not an interrogation. These are just suggestions. With some of these suggestions, you will be able to cope, they will help you, others not, absolutely no problem. The idea is to examine your life. Your life experience, your personal life experience, and in particular, throughout all those questions, the dimension of consolation. Where, in one way or another, at what places, what moments, with which persons, at what times, and in what way, whatever, that's why the questions are for, did I live? Did I feel consolation? Did I grow and so on? In other words, what is Margis? What can Margis be for me? Not what should it be. You know, where can I discover through my very personal and something sometimes very strange and crooked and whatever or personal experience, well, how does that, where are the traces of God's presence in my experience? That's for the day. Later in the afternoon, there will be a sharing. In the sharing, it is not, the intention is not that you share the most personal, deepest, intimate discoveries, between brackets, you have made. No, if you want to share something personal, you do it. But during the day, feel free to be as personal as you can. For the sharing, we suggest you to share about, so you have those questions, you have them on the back side of the sheet, the questions for sharing. So about the person, about an experience, and about the challenge. So three precise, concrete things you can maybe extract more or less from the reflection, discernment, and prayer of the day as a help. It's also just a suggestion to for the sharing. I have, or we have started with that YouTube meditation. Maybe some of the images, some of the ideas in those YouTubes can help you also to for some more personal time of prayer. There are also two texts I have mentioned, Bible, Gospel texts, that could help you with this team of magis. You have Matthew 14, the multiplication of the bread. With regards to our theme, you could say that Jesus asks his disciples to do something they cannot do, they have never done before. And in the end, they succeed. And why do they succeed? They succeed because Jesus asks them, and because they do the whole thing of the multiplication of the bread. When you read the text, Jesus is in the center. He invites. He gets, the breads are being brought to him. He gives benediction on the, he blesses the breads and the fish, and he gives it to the disciples in order for them to distribute them to the people. It's Jesus who is central in the whole story. And then you have the washing of the feet, where Jesus shows to his disciples what it means to love. And where he says, not only I gave you an example, but I gave you this example of my whole life in order for you to imitate me, to do what I have done, and to go very far, to go very far in this life of love and of service. We have Mass at 12. At 12?
Yeah.